Hello, everyone, and welcome to Successful Fundraising in 5 Steps. Not necessarily easy steps, but 5 steps. I've taken a lot of time to distill this down to these 5 major chunks, and I hope this will be helpful to you. I'm Brian Saber, President of Asking Matters. I know many of you know me. I'd love it if you could type in the chat box your position and your organization, so we can all get to know each other. That's one of the benefits of Zoom. So please share your position and where you're and who you're working for. That would be great. And let's see in the chat, because I know there are at least 100 of us on already and more coming in. And I'm going to put my glasses on for this one. Great. From all wonderful libraries, leadership or officers, founding EDs, development directors, presidents. I'm wondering, am I seeing board members? Let's see, imagining. Oh, I love the Williamstown Theater Festival. That's fantastic. Wonderful. Haven for Hope Ministries, YMCAs. I love, oh, Kristen. I love my YMCAs. I've known Kristen a long time. Welcome everyone from Montreal. Thank you, Canadians. We love our Canadians. Always have to give a shout out from let's see, from New Jersey. That's where I lived for many years before heading out here, Wilmington. Great to have you all, and a special welcome to board members who are taking the time to join today. Those of you who know me know that I've been doing this work for a long time. I have been in the field 41 years. I spent 25 either as a director of development or executive director. And then I decided that I could make a bigger impact by starting this company, Asking Matters, and helping our field get more comfortable asking for money, comfortable and effective. It's the biggest challenge we have on the fundraising front, this idea of building relationships and asking people one-on-one. And I wanted to figure out how to distill it, how to break it down, how to make it doable. And that work naturally led me to boards, because unless you're a really big organization, and we might as well type it in right now. So type in the chat, how many full-time development officers do you have at your organization? How many do you have? And I'm going to see, I know I'm going to see a bunch of zeros, ones, twos. My first job, my organization had a $200,000 budget. I was, what's it, chief cook, bottle washer, I don't know, but I was the ED and the fundraiser and everything else. I eventually was the head of fundraising and then the head of a mid-size organization where we had 4 development staff. But even there, we didn't have a major gift officer. Let's see, Danelle has 20. That's a lot. And Julie has 20. So you've got a nice, significant staff there. You've probably got some major gift officers. And still, unless you're in the biggest institutions, you need your board out there building relationships and fundraising for you. And this is a challenge. Every organization thinks they're uniquely challenged in this role. And I want to say you are in very good company. I've trained over 100 boards. I've worked with tons of organizations. And this is a challenging part of the work. There are many reasons why. And at the end, when we skip into Board Fundraising Pro, which I'm so excited about, I'll share more about that. But we're going to right now jump into these 5 steps. That lead to the board being engaged in what I would call strategic fundraising, willingly, comfortably, authentically, passionately building those relationships, and in many cases, asking for money. And I lay that all out because a lot of the fundraising we have, our board members do, we'll talk about a little bit later, is not great long-term fundraising. Now, I've had to make a budget many years in a row. And I know what it's like when you're looking at your board and it's like, please go out, please ask for more gifts, or we're having an event and we really depend on the board to make that event successful. And a lot of those gifts turn out to be transactional and short term. We can't get away from all that, but what we can do is really try to move our board members towards being our partners in developing these long-term strategic gifts. I just saw a post this morning, and I've got to bring it up. So, Nanette Enrique, who is at the Hotchkiss School, she's the head of fundraising there, wrote that she started at Boys and Girls Clubs, and that's where she got, built her chops. And she's now been a donor for 25 years. And I was so excited to see that because, being in organizations, that this is what moves the needle, the donors who stay with us for a long time. So we might get someone to sit at someone's table at a gala, but is that person ever going to give again? Right? And there are so many challenges with that. We want the donor who's going to stay for a long time. I'm going to ask another question because I love this is one of my favorite questions when I train. What's the longest number of consecutive years you've made a gift to any organization? I graduated from my alma mater now, it'll be 42 years ago in May. And so I've made 41 gifts. And right there, we've got 34 from Meredith. Meredith, tell us what, can you share what organization it is? 24, 10. This is, we know in fundraising, many of you are fundraisers here to college, of course, our alma mater, that when we have a relationship, we give gifts ongoing, and those are the gifts. And we're going to talk about that during this Make a Compelling Case. Those are the gifts that really cement our organization, give it the financial stability, which is a big and challenging word today, to fulfill our mission, to get bigger and do more. And we need our boards to help. So 30 plus, 30 plus. I love it. And this is one of the great institutions in America. The nonprofit world is one of our shining stars, by the way. Very few countries do what we do and willingly give so much money. We'll talk about how much to nonprofits year in and year out. So, what successful steps? Here's our first step. We need to somehow put this in a context for board members, other than we need you to go out and raise money. We need you to go out and raise money. We need to help them understand what this is all about. What is this all about? What is philanthropy, right? Because we tend, especially board members, tend to think about money when they go out as opposed to philanthropy. Right, we're asking someone for money, or we're cultivating them in the hopes they will give us money. And so there's this whole money story in our head, when in fact, the person sitting across the table, whom we're engaging and educating and so forth, that person has their philanthropy hat on, has their philanthropy hat on. And so we want our board members to understand the difference between the two. Now, I mentioned that I'm going to share four really quick, effective exercises to do at a board meeting. And I hope I'm going to ask for, as a takeaway, for everyone to commit to doing one of these four exercises at their next board meeting. Whatever else you do, I hope you will do this, because having these discussions really helps your board members understand philanthropy and buy into it. So I want them to think of their own philanthropy and share what's the most meaningful charitable gift they ever made, what prompted it, how did they feel when they made it. You could even ask, how do they feel about it today? And to look back at your own, because we all have those formative experiences, excuse me. And when we're with our donors, we're going to ask them actually about their philanthropy. It's something board members have to be taught about. How do we have these discussions that have to be taught, excuse me, that we want to help our donors understand their own philanthropy so that we can tie into it and so forth. This is a great brief exercise. By the way, almost always when I do a training, when I do exercises with board members, I break people into small groups. I'm a big fan of small groups. It makes sure that everyone chats. Because philanthropy makes us feel good. And it will sound a little like, I don't know, a sales point, but it is true that our donors, if they give to us willingly, are going to feel really good after they've done it. There's a book that came out a few years ago called The Paradox of Generosity. Now, it's not just about giving, dollars. It's about generosity in all forms. But people who are generous have better life outcomes overall. There's this correlation between being charitable in your life, being giving and helpful, and being having mental health, good mental health, feeling happy, and so forth. Good philanthropy benefits everybody. And I think it's important to share that because it doesn't feel that way when our board members are just hitting everyone over the head for a gift. Next is to share how effective this type of giving is. So Kent Dove, long ago of what's now called the Lilly School of Philanthropy, then the Indiana University School, Indiana University School, I've forgotten the name, excuse me, but he found that 2% of all direct mail asks result in a gift. Similar to emails today and crowdfunding, you send out tons of these, you get a small response. Still good to do it and have it in your portfolio. Now, calling, not cold calling, but when your alma mater, your place of worship, a medical cause you really enjoy, when they call you, 25% of those calls result in a gift. But what Kent found is that when we're in person facing each other, 75% of those asks result in a gift. 75%, really incredible odds. There are many reasons for it, but the most important is that when we're in front of someone and we're looking each other in the eye, and today that can be by video chat, which is helpful, we care more about the other person. We're listening more closely. We want to come through. We want to be seen as good. Just by sharing that space and looking at each other, we form a bond that makes it more compelling to give. Because at the end of the day, people give to people. People give to people, even if it's institutional funding, government funding. There's someone you know, a giving officer, the aide to a council member, whoever, who you're building a relationship with. And back to this question I asked about how many giving officers you have, unless you have a whole team of major gift officers like my alma mater, you don't have enough people to go see all the good prospects, the people who could give a gift worth the time and money to take the time to develop. So it's in what we're looking for is our board to be a team of major gift officers with us, but all on a smaller scale. I don't think a lot of board members know where the money's coming from. In 2024, we'll get the 2025 numbers later this spring from Giving USA. Almost $600 billion was given out in the United States. What most board members don't know is that two-thirds of it is outright from individuals. Another, anywhere from 8 to 10% over the last 20 years is bequests. That's all individuals leaving money in their estates. And half of all foundation money is individual or small family foundation money, where an individual's giving their own money. It's just that they've parked it in some fund or foundation for tax purposes, for posterity, family dynamics, whatever it is. And when you put it all together, and this has been consistent for decades, 84 to 86, 87% of all charitable dollars come from individuals. So we need to make the case, right? We need to share this. We also need to share how effective this major and then eventually planned giving can be. Because over time, it's actually the least expensive fundraising. Yes, in the short run, we see it takes staff time, and staff time is expensive. But when we build these relationships, these are the donors who keep on giving and giving in larger quantities once they've had a relationship. We know that special events are very expensive, and a lot of it's transactional fundraising, annual giving, right? Better, but we're still churning through a lot of donors, unfortunately. But when we get to these larger ones, which are really based on relationship, these are the ones that really can set our organization a sail. So the question becomes, which piece of the pie do we want? That's the compelling case. What do we have to do? We now know, right, that people actually feel good when they give. We know that most money comes from individuals. We know the biggest gifts And the gifts that actually are the least costly to raise over time come from individuals. So what is stopping us? And that leads to the second exercise to have with your team. Why don't we cultivate more often? Why don't you type in the chat box, what do you think is the number one thing that stops board members from cultivating and asking more often in person? What do you think stops them? IT maybe don't know how to do it. Well, this is a big one. Fear. We all have that knowledge, fear, a lot of fear, lack of time, uncomfortable, fear of rejection. I've been in over 3,000 meetings with donors in my lifetime. I still get anxious. We need to acknowledge that, right? So part of this exercise is let's just acknowledge it. I've got an exercise called the anxiety excitement worksheet. Let's list all the reasons why we're anxious, but let's also list all the reasons we're excited about our organization. And let's be honest about how challenging but important this work is. It's interesting with knowledge, actually, because I think board members feel they need to be much more knowledgeable about the organization than in truth they need to be. And we're going to talk about that under making the case. So we're going to come back to that. As a matter of fact, in step three. So step two, what do we expect from you? Besides, please go out and ask, please go out and ask. So I am a strong believer in this policy. Now you may have a minimum gift, a give or get, give and get this set amount. And you may have to stick with that over time. But as I say, I've worked with tons of organizations. I've seen studies on this. And I think what really builds the strongest board is for everyone to pitch in to the best of their ability. And I can do a whole 10 minutes on why the others are challenging. But for now, let's just go with that if we could. And by the way, if you've got questions, put them in the questions box because so many of you are in the chat and it might be hard for me to see it. I will absolutely answer all your questions. Especially the ones I can find in the Q&A at the end of our 45 minutes here before we get into Board Fundraising Pro. So give and get to the best of your ability. What does that mean? Everyone must give. What I hope is a personally significant gift. This is actually, though I don't list it as an exercise here, another exercise I do where I ask people to think for a minute, what makes a personally significant gift for you? What makes it significant? Where do you give your significant gifts? Most people, until we ask this question, really haven't thought about it, even in terms of the organization on whose board they sit. What's a significant gift for you? One you have to pay out over time, one that you've got to discuss with your spouse or significant other. Would make it significant? What would make it significant? And I see a question. I do see, will we receive the slides? Yes. At the very beginning, I had a slide that said, you will get a PDF of the slides, a link to the recording within 24 hours, and you'll get an MP3 as well if you want to listen to that. Everyone must help cultivate relationships. If you have a board member who won't be an ambassador, an educator, a thanker, any of these other things, I'm not sure why they're on the board, right? And most people on the board would be willing to do these things. If you said, would you send some thank you notes out? Would you make some thank you note calls? Would you send an email to one of our large donors, educating them on our new program? Our board members will do that. I also think everyone should ask for something. Now, I say something because there are many things to ask for other than charitable gifts. And it strikes a lot less fear in a board member to ask someone for an in-kind product that you need, to sit on a committee or on the board with you, to open a door to someone else. And I think everyone can do this on behalf of an organization. But what might surprise you? Now, this is going to bring joy to the ears of board members and a frown to the staff members because I'm sort of giving board members an out. I don't think every board member should be out there asking for gifts. It is not easy work. If it can't be done well, I don't want it done because it'll leave money on the table. And if a board member is going to find it so difficult and upsetting to actually ask, then they're not going to enjoy their time on the board and they're not going to be as involved and they're going to be looking for an exit strategy. And I've seen this over time. Now, I think most board members would be part of an ask over time, partner on an ask with someone. But this idea of sending people out on their own and thinking they can do this, especially without training, and we know this is an issue and why we're here today, then you're really sending them out to slaughter. And you're going to churn through board members who are your best allies. I really feel strongly about this, as you can tell. And then, so what are we asking them to do? We can't ask them to, if they're begging and arm twisting, it's awful. And I hate quid pro quo. I've written a couple of times about this, that my number one wish in the nonprofit world, when it comes to boards, is to get rid of quid pro quo. What do I mean? I ask you to give $500, come to my benefit or come to my benefit and buy a seat. And then you ask me to do the same, you, my friend. And so we're swapping gifts with each other. And we keep doing that. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to say to my organization, now my friend Ken, he just made a gift. Don't bother him during the year. I will go back to him next year and ask him again. So we don't have a chance to cultivate him, we, the organization. And then eventually I'm going to leave the board and I'm not going to solicit Ken when I'm off the board. And I'm not going to want to give to Ken's organization if he's not giving to mine. I've asked people to try to have a détente with their friends. How about if you agree you're each just going to give $500 more to your own charity? And I've had board members who say, "Can I just give you what my friends are giving me and not ask them?" And I say, "Yes." She said, "I'd rather do that and stop giving to them." And she's right. She was right because what we want to do is build relationships. So what I want is for every board member to be this mini major gift officer who's got four prospects on their radar screen. Four people they are primarily responsible for throughout the year. While they may not ask for the gift, they can have all those other important contacts. Ask them out for coffee to get to know them better. Send them a totally personalized email talking about the last board meeting you were at and how impactful the work is that the organization is doing. Invite them for a site visit. Come with them to see program in action if your program is accessible and something like that. And they may not even have four of their own. But can anyone here say that every potential major gift donor at their organization is getting as much attention as they should? I don't think you'd be on this call if that were the case. So let's have our board members help us staff with the current people we have, people who give or can give at a level that's worth our individual time. Four. It's one of my magic numbers in fundraising. Not five, sounds like too many. Not three, because if one or two aren't active, then the board member won't have enough work. I've settled on four, and it seems to work. And let's see, Bethany, I see this question. Who's responsible for making a list of potential donors? I'm going to talk a little bit about that, I think, in step four. So let's see if I cover that. But it is a joint effort. Okay. Step three, how to tell their story. I saw, don't know what to say, don't have enough knowledge. My definition of a story is a compelling set of ideas that moves the teller and the listener. And I actually think the most important word here is teller, you or your board member who is telling the story. We get stuck on this. Well, what do we want the donor? What do we think the donor wants to hear? Or board members, I think the biggest challenge is not that board members don't have knowledge, it's just they don't know everything and they think they should. They see us staff very eloquently talking about everything that's happening in the organization. They feel they need to be able to do that. Absolutely not. No one expects a board member to know everything. They're volunteers, right? What they expect is that the board member, whatever the board member is conveying, is going to be authentic to who they are and that the board member is going to be passionate about it, because when that happens, that story is compelling to the listener. They want the board member's excitement and passion. Now, I remember 25, 30 years ago, there was talk of an elevator pitch. That word makes me cringe. That phrase makes me cringe, because it implies that we're telling every board member to memorize something and say the exact same thing when you go out there. Unless a board member is a really good actor, unless that's exactly what they wanted to say, it's not going to be natural to them. It's not going to be something they can be passionate about. It's not going to feel authentic. It's going to make this work so much harder. So the number one thing in fundraising to do is to help our board members establish their own story and feel comfortable with it. Because when they do, they're comfortable and confident going out and talking about the organization. We don't want them saying, most of you fundraisers on the call will know that the number one skill in fundraising is listening. We're supposed to listen and learn from our donors. So we don't want to be sharing everything but the kitchen sink, because we're not leaving enough time to ask our questions, donors, and learn what's important to them. And that's a whole other webinar in terms of the arc of the ask and so forth. And I'll mention that as a training point. Our board members are having a one-on-one conversation with someone about why they're passionate about this organization. They don't have to share everything. Now, the challenge, well, before the challenge, here's my favorite cartoon. We don't have a lot of laughter in fundraising, though my dear colleague Tony Martinetti is quite the jokester, and that manages to put a lot in there. But this cartoon from The New Yorker more than a decade ago, really sums it up. I would hate to do this. I was a student phone-a-thoner in college. If any of you did that, type that in the chat box. I hated that, and it wasn't even really cold calling. I was calling alums who were happy to hear from a student, but it still felt like, ugh, hated it, Carolyn says. Hated it, hated it. Many of us did it. It was the start of our nonprofit lives, right? And somehow, even after that terrible experience of having to make those calls, we stayed. I owe everything to my alma mater. I'll share, it's Brandeis University. I'm so close to it. I'm now on the National Alumni Board. And I ended up working, I had a work study job and I volunteered. I did student stuff, and that's what got me into this whole nonprofit thing. But boy, I hated the student phone-a-thoning. We don't want our board members doing that, right? We want them talking to people they know, or people who are known well to our organization. And what was this? Mispronouncing the name Eek. Yeah, we've all had these experiences. So, one of the things we have to teach our board members is how to talk about vision and impact. And I teach a whole thing on this: vision versus need, impact versus features. We want to elevate how they talk about the organization, because board members often will list the programs we have: swim classes for our kids, we have after school for teens, we have congregate meals for seniors, we have three wet labs, we have four theaters, we saved 1,000 green spaces last year. But the question is, what are we hoping the world will be like? And what impact are those features having? What is the benefit of having swim lessons for kids, and what impact does that make overall? So having some exercises around that is very important. It's something I focus on a lot in my trainings and otherwise. Now, we haven't talked about the asking styles yet, but many of you know asking matters, and so you know the asking styles. If you're not familiar, I hope you will become familiar soon, and you can do that by going to quiz.askingmatters.com. There's a free 30-question quiz. I have every board member take it when I train. We fall, it's a personality rubric, not unlike a Myers-Briggs or a DISC, but we developed this for askers. It's called Asking Styles. And it's based on how we interact, introvert, extrovert, and how we think analytic versus intuitive. Because once we understand our personality and we understand that no one has it all, we get more comfortable. And this has been particularly effective for board members. And all the training I do is based on this. And you can take this quiz. Everyone can take this quiz for free, and you can create your own exercises to do at board meetings based on this. Some of them would be are just intuitive. Right? But what I want to focus on here is that each of us has a different vocabulary when we talk about the organization. It's why we can't have one elevator pitch. We're all going to tell different stories, right? We're all going to tell different stories based on our perspective, based on when we're analytic or intuitive. Are we goal-oriented? Are we visionary? Are we heart-oriented? Are we plan-oriented? Okay, step four, provide training. Okay, I'm launching my poll here. I think it's this one. One second. Okay, got to ask this question. And yes, in a way, it's a leading question since I'm going to talk about Board Phasing Pro, but ouch. How many hours of training have you given your board in the last 2 years? The numbers are painful, but not surprising. I'll give you another 5 seconds or so. We've got half of you. We've got 150 of you on now, which is wonderful, which says a lot about this challenge of training the board and needing the board. Okay, we've got about 100 of you. And in the interest of time, I'm going to close the poll and share the results. Not surprisingly. So, wow, half of all of you on today, no training. Another more than a third, 1 to 3 hours. We've got two organizations have done more than 6 hours. Congratulations to you. And a couple of you, a number of you, nine. So maybe 12% of you have done at least 4 hours over the last 2 years. Not a very good number. Yes. And I see Spencer's emoji. How do we expect our board members to do this without training? I will share that I never had training. But then again, 41 years ago, there wasn't the training when we were etching on tablets with chisels that there is today. There certainly was nothing online. But I learned by doing, right? I was in the trenches. I became an executive director of this teeny little dance company when I was 26 years old. You can imagine how little they paid. I had virtually no experience. I had no fundraising experience, and they hired me. And I had to learn how to fundraise. And through trial and error, I figured it out. But I did it all the time, year in and year out. Our board members, many have never done it. They've never sat on a board, maybe. They didn't have to do it on a board. I don't care if they've done sales or what they've done in their business, not the same as asking for money for an organization where all you get in return mostly is feeling good. You are not a car salesman giving people a car at the end of the day or giving someone life insurance or whatever it is you're trying to get them to buy of yours, your time, your product, whatever. And they don't do it often for us. They're not out there every day. They may help for a little bit this week and not do anything for a couple of weeks or a month. We need to train them or they'll never know what to do. And yes, we need to train them even if they're going to leave our organization or else our field will never have people who are trained. So I'm going to share a litany of things they need to be trained on, which will probably make you anxious, but this is what they need. Okay. Right? Most board members don't know how to fundraise. They don't. They don't. It's not the same as sales, and they don't know. First, they have to know the ABCs. And someone asked, how do we come up with the prospects? Well, ABCs, I owe that to Kim Klein of Grassroots Fundraising, and I've been using it since I heard it from her. We need to find people who have the ability to make a gift that's worth our time and money to cultivate and solicit individually. People who believe in what we do. The richest philanthropists don't support everything. And we have to have contact. I was in New York 20 some odd years. How many times did someone say, we should solicit Mike Bloomberg? Sure. Do you know Mike Bloomberg? I don't know Mike Bloomberg. If neither of us knows Mike Bloomberg, he is not a prospect, he's a suspect. And I don't go after many of them because there are 500 people standing in line outside his door. And there are 500 people at Bloomberg Philanthropies stopping you from seeing Michael Bloomberg. We have to have a context. So we have to teach board members not only where the money's from, but well, thank you for laughing at that, Monica. Yes, not a prospect, a suspect. We have to teach them who prospects are. So that they stop giving us names of people, of all the rich people in town, because we know those names as staff. So they understand it's at a certain level and such. And we need to look inside at our list the same way. So further to that question of, who selects the prospects, one of the things I do when I train is I try to get board members to look beyond the people they know best. Right? People are going to go to their family members and best friends because they can lean on them. Now, in fact, I'm doing that. I'm trying to raise money for a family that has been impacted by honestly, by their father being taken away. They haven't heard from him in a month. And I do plan to ask my best friends because for that, I can lean on them. But if I'm on the board of an organization, I need to think not of someone who's going to give me one gift right now, but someone who's going to build that relationship. And that means looking at the networks you have that are strongest. And actually, my strongest network is my alumni network. So I, because of my visibility as an alum and all the contacts there, I could go to some of my classmates much sooner than my best friends or family members if I know that they have ability and they have belief. So I try to teach board members that. That's part of the training. So a great exercise is to have that list. You're going to have these slides to put up this list of networks and ask people to identify their three strongest networks and two people in each who might have the ABCs. That exercise can be done in 10 minutes at a board meeting. You could also send it out in advance and ask people to send responses to you. And again, if you've come in late, you're getting the slides, you'll see those exercises with the prompts, and you'll be set. We need to have board members identify all the steps and cultivation and what they might do each step of the way. They need to understand what the whole process is, not just how to solicit people. So here's your fourth exercise. Come up with as many ways as possible to educate and involve prospects. Figure out what's comfortable for you. There are so many different ways to do it. When we teach the asking styles, we say that no one is better or worse. Everyone's different. We all have different strengths. We have different ways of going about it. Some of it really has to do with this introvert, extrovert. I am not going to go to the gala if I can help it. I'm certainly not going to bring people, but I will do one-on-one because I'm an introvert. Next, how are they going to talk to them? Right? What do they say? They don't know what to say, except I need to ask you for money for my organization. With their tail between their legs, they say it. Right? What are they saying? What are they saying if they're not asking? We need to give them scripts. We need to help them practice so that they feel comfortable. What do they do if they get a no? How do they deal with a no? Oh, here's a good one. How do they make contact? Well, what not only what do they say, but how do they do it? And this is in a way a quick dichotomy for me. Everyone has always said, you got to get on the phone. It's just terrible. Today, everyone's on a cell phone. Many people don't want the call. I don't like using the phone. I'm an introvert, never liked it. I want board members to reach out in a way they're comfortable with because they'll be more effective. But we need to teach them that. And then we have to teach them how to have an intentional conversation. So another framework at Asking Matters besides the asking styles is the arc of the ask, which my co-founder Andrea Kielstedt came up with. How do we move through meeting? What is our role each step of the meeting? So you can see where there is a tremendous amount we have to teach them. Some of it we now know instinctively, and I always say we because I'm first and foremost a staff person. I have been forever. We know this from having done it. Some of us actually don't, right? We ourselves never got any training. A lot of people become major gift officers never having really done that work, and do get training. And we seem to have money for staff training, but not board training, and we need it for both. So then we come to five. And which is to support their work. I truly believe that board members can only do as much fundraising as there is staff to support it. It's very few board members can autonomously and independently do this work, because it involves reporting and keeping track to help move the relationship along, to remember what happened in the past. It involves needing a sounding board when someone is trying to figure out, well, what's the best way for me to approach someone? This is what they're interested in. What do you think we could do? We do have to have staff time. But here's where the multiplier effect comes in, because we can support their work and steward it. We've got to support our own work and such. But then they can go out and have those meetings, right? And build those relationships. And it's also so effective for volunteers to have those relationships. But we do have to be able to support it in a variety of ways. We have to provide them material, whether that's information about the organization in a format they understand. I know a lot of you are saying, I give my board members so much information. Is it actually what they asked for and what they can use? We've got to provide them the right material. We have to work with them to strategize. We should tag team. I saw someone say partnering is great. I always brought a volunteer whenever I could to my meetings, whether they be cultivation or solicitation. And not necessarily us going to the meeting together, but sometimes it's you have your role, I have my role. Very helpful. Reporting, right? Where are we at? What's the next step? And part of it is providing training. And without some help, that training has to come from you. There's always going to be a little training that staff have to do. But without any formal training, a lot of it will fall to your shoulders. So those are my five steps. Those are the five steps. And I meant to summarize them at the end, but I didn't. But it's, you know, setting expectations. It's making your case. It is, I forgot what they are actually, training, supporting the work, and setting the right expectations. So those are the five questions. And I'm going to put on my glasses so I can see the chat box, and let's see what we've got. And then in a couple of minutes, we'll try to move on to Board Fundraising Pro. Are there any? I see two open questions. Let me go to them one second. Okay, one from Sheila. How do you respond to boards that say they are governance boards and don't do fundraising? Oh, this is one of the things I teach in setting expectations, Sheila. You know, let me spend a minute on this, even though it'll push back. And that's fine if we push back Board Fundraising Pro a few minutes. I'm only going to spend a few minutes on it. Boards evolve over time. One of the things I teach, it's actually in this book I wrote with my dear friend Michael Davidson, is on this transition. So boards start as hands-on. There's no staff. Generally, you bring together a band of warriors and you're doing everything. And there is some fundraising, but it's like bake sales and all hands on deck and just tell everyone you know you got this organization and such. And then you start to get institutional support, you start to get staff, and you move towards a governance board. But I believe governance and fundraising are the two go together and are the requirements of a governance board. The state attorney general of any state, there is a requirement in the nonprofit world of having three board members, a president, a secretary, and a treasurer. The reason why the state attorney general only requires three is they feel that's the minimum number of people required to oversee an organization and make sure it is being fiduciarily responsible. So why do you have a bigger board? Well, you might get some expertise and some different positions and perspectives and things, but at a certain point, you build your board because you need the board to help you fundraise, because you've done the institutional fundraising, you've gotten maybe some government grants, and now you're coming back to individuals and say, we need bigger gifts. It means the board needs to shift. And there's a pain point there in growing. And in getting everyone on board with this new set of expectations, where so, but it, and it's a 3-year process because you try and set out new expectations that the nominating or governing committee comes up with. You codify those in a job description. And then some people say, yes, we get it. Some say, nah, not me. I'm going to leave the board. A few don't really want to do it, but stay on the board. But then everyone you bring on the next couple of years knows the new expectations. And so within 3 years, there is, you've got 90% of the board or better understanding this. So it does take time, and it does start with a clear job description and an agreement that this is what's needed in order to fulfill the vision. There's an exercise, I think it's in this book, of lining up a basic budget, a more visionary budget, and the big impactful budget, what the gap is and where the board is really needed, why we need you. We can do this without you, but if we're going to do this, we need you. And it helps to get the board engaged. And I wish I could chat 15 minutes on that, but let me take two more questions. How do you help them figure out what kind of training supports they need? You aren't sure what the obstacles are. Well, I guess I'd say after working with 100 boards, most boards are the same. They have mostly the same obstacles. There could be some that are very specific to your sector, but mostly what I've shared with you is what I have found they need. They need to get more comfortable with what they're saying. They need to understand what strategic fundraising is and what all the roles are that they can play. They need to understand how to have those conversations. Those are the things they need. Okay, one more. Let's see. I have someone in between me and the board who doesn't want to ask the board to fundraise, but rather encourage them. Oh, yes, which is super vague. So it is challenging. I've been a director of development many times and had to really bring the executive director along on fundraising. There are two significant examples, which really were a big part of my career. And over time, it worked. I started with executive directors who were afraid to even let me talk to the biggest donors because they didn't want to upset those relationships. And I had to first instill confidence in them. And eventually, all of those relationships came to me, or me as a second or partner. This is very challenging work because we as staff have to manage up. It's one of the challenges in the nonprofit world. We're managing up. As directors of development, we have to manage up to our executive directors and get them to do the right fundraising, good fundraising, enough fundraising, and to send the right messages to the board. As executive directors, we're working for a board. Everyone's got different opinions. Ideally, we have someone on the board who is a supporter who gets this and wants to lead the charge, because it is hard to manage up. Much easier for the board chair or the governance chair or the chair of the fundraising committee to get up at a board meeting and say, come on, everyone, this is what we really need to do. So it is challenging, but some of it is that executive directors, I know there are many of you on, we come to these organizations often without any fundraising training or experience ourselves. Most executive directors come from the program side. So they have a large learning curve, and we as development staff often have to help train them so that they can be good fundraisers themselves. Okay, I answered the three questions that were brought to me. So, and there might be some in the chat, but what I'm going to do now, I am going to move to Board Fundraising Pro. So, oh, dumb. That's right. I did have one more thing, and that is take away next steps. So, having heard this whole conversation, type in the chat, what do you think your next step is? Did one of these exercises resonate for you? Will you do that one exercise at your next board meeting, and which one will it be? Get the training, Wendy. That's good. What is your next step going to be? Network analysis. Good. Excellent. What else? Thank you, Julia. What's your next step going to be? You got to have a next step. I've been blabbing for 45 minutes, which I actually hate to do, but exercises one and two, that's great. Exercise one, share the video, excellent. Let's see that we are all learning. Great, the relationship networks. I'm glad that's meaningful to you. Share the video, share exercises. Wonderful. Take one of those steps. You might meet with just your development team. You might meet with the development committee of the board or with the executive committee to share what you've learned today. And at the very least, so I have been in a lot of board meetings, and I've never been to a board meeting that didn't have 10 wasted minutes or 10 minutes that couldn't have been spent better, where we had less reporting that could have been reported in advance and a little more of something else. Use that something else for fundraising. Use that something else, maybe even to start the meeting with everyone getting three names of donors to call on their cell phone just to thank for gifts. I love this. It's often my first step towards getting the board to fundraise. Board members end up loving it. They have great conversations. If anyone answers the phone, they feel good. So somehow or another, don't have the only fundraising mentions at your board meeting be the report from the director of development or the head of the fundraising committee. Do something that engages the board members. So thanks for sharing all of that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for board members, a special shout out for taking the time in the middle of the day. Thank you to all my peers. The nonprofit world, I'm very lucky to have been in it for almost 42 years now, 42 years next month. And it's just been a great way to spend my life because I'm around the best people who aren't out to make the most money or whatever. They're out to change lives, they're out to help, to make an impact. And I appreciate that and all of you so well. Okay, now's the time anyone who doesn't want to hear about Board Fundraising Pro, this product I have that I'm passionate about. Leave. I want this to be mostly content today, but I also am really proud of this and I know this can help, and I have made it as affordable and easy as I could imagine. So let me talk to you about Board Fundraising Pro. Okay. And yes, Chris will be sending a recording, video and audio and a copy of the slides. You'll get that all by tomorrow. And Board Fundraising Pro is officially now on sale. And Kyle has put the link in there. So if you can't stay, you can also get a lot of information from that site, and there's a video on it. But I want to share this. And then if you've got questions, I want to hear your questions in real time, hopefully in the questions box again, because it's easier, but I'll try to find them in the chat. First, we've got to imagine the success, right? If we can get all our board members on the same page and doing this together, what we can accomplish. It's a lot. We really can do a lot. This is not easy work. It does take effort, it does take time, but our board members, they're our best supporters. So we've got to get them from, oops, here. Oops, where it is. There we go. This is where they're at. Right? And how are we going to get them past that? We got to do all those things I talked about. So board fund. So I launched Board Fundraising Pro actually a few years ago, and I learned a lot over the last few years and from more trainings. So I've made significant changes to it. But the goals have always been to give board members ongoing tips and training, which the staff is never going to be able to do, tools to do the work, and sort of a sense of community. And for staff, I want to take it off your plate. I want to be the expertise you don't have. I also want to be the voice, the objective voice. One of the reasons people bring me in for trainings is because I can say to the board, this is just how it is. I know you think you're unique as a board, but you're not. I've been in front of many boards, and basically, you're 99% the same. It's like all of us, right? Humans are almost all identical. Boards are very, very similar to each other. I can come in as the expert and say, no, it's not writing another grant to a foundation. I promise you, that's not the solution for your organization. Nope, it's not more government funding. You know, this is what, no, it's not, crowdfunding. You need help when you get stuck, right? Who do you call? You've got a question, unless you have some consultant you're dealing with. How do you ask a question about board fundraising, about moving this forward and stuff? And you need the tools. What I've done in this second iteration is I'm being much more proactive. The first time around, it was more about how I help you do the training in a way. I did some webinars and such, but now it's I'm doing the training. And I'm going to share what that is. And you, as staff, can do virtually nothing, and your board can get trained, or you can add to that. It's all based on these asking styles, which are so impactful. And here's what you get. In a sense, it is worth my describing, how it unfolds. So when you join, and there is an enrollment slash setup fee, we set up a customized landing page for you at Asking Matters. With pictures and a logo. You can even, I believe, customize the copy. I meant to ask Kyle about that earlier, but I think you can. And on this page is a lot of the material that I will share and such. But what's most important here is this is where you put in the names of all your board members and your relevant staff, your ED, your director of development, anyone working with the board on this. Because once you've done this, we can take it from there. So what we ask you to do is help us set up that page. And we're going to go forward. I've developed an intro month. So I've decided to, instead of having people go to this page and try and learn on their own, I'm going to spool out this information over the course of a month directly to everyone who's enrolled. First, a welcome video on helping everyone understand what Board Fundraising Pro is, setting the stage somewhat and doing best practices like we did today. And then introducing the asking styles and hopefully getting everyone to then watch a video on their particular style. So that's the first month. And then starting the second month, every week, my Monday morning board matters. It is just a thought that lands in everyone's inbox, something that hopefully they'll think about for a few seconds or during the week. That comes every week. Once a month, I'm going to send a short video with a bite-sized exercise, three prompts that board members might think about on their own, or it might be something to bring to a board meeting that month or the next month, or to your special events committee meeting or something like that. Every month, I'm going to do a 30-minute webinar, keeping them to 30 because board members' time is valuable. They can't necessarily give the time staff can on really important topics like these two: how to tell your story, how to approach family and friends. As a matter of fact, I will be doing these in, I think it's March and April. I'm restarting the series, and I'm going to start because we're going to have a new group, a big new group of members. And those will all be recorded so you can watch them afterwards, so everyone will have access to them. Monthly newsletter, which I've been doing, where I announce what's coming up. I encapsulate what happened. So if you missed a Monday morning board matters or you missed that video, they'll all be in the newsletter. So if people really can't every week do their, open these and participate, they'll always get it as a summary at the end of the month. I have a private LinkedIn group for Board Fundraising Pro where all the leads, anyone who's organizing this and trying to motivate the board members, so some staff, maybe a board member too, can join. I'm going to push you to join. And you can ask me any question there because whatever you're struggling with, someone else is. It is a private, confidential group just for our members. It's not public. And I will answer any question you have there related to the board, even beyond fundraising and fundraising training. And I'm inviting experts into that group. So I'm going to be announcing soon. I have two fundraising and governance experts who will be in this group to help answer those questions. And I'm going to be bringing other people into it and on board to help answer your questions there. So it's like having me as a consultant, I must say, when you've got this question and you're stuck. Back to the landing page. The landing page is going to have all of the welcome videos. So when you have a new board member come on, you'll type them in here and they'll get our series. But you can also say, how about going to the webpage to catch up? Here are the four videos to watch on our landing page. and you've got them there. And if someone misses something, they don't necessarily have to find it in their emails. They can go to your landing page, and I'll constantly be adding tools, forms, and other information to it. And if you can believe it, and I know it's 1201, and I see a question come in, I'm going to take that, Meredith, from you in a sec. It is $49 a month for your entire board and relevant staff. $49 a month. That's probably on average $2 or $2.50 per board member per month. No contract, right? This is the bottom line price for you to train, and a one-time setup fee of $99, because Kyle needs to reach out to you. You need to give us our logo, all sorts of stuff, and you're going to have questions. And we want to be able to have the time to set you up properly and answer those questions. And also, we're not asking for a contract, and we really can't set up a page for just the $49 and then have you leave in a month. I hope you can appreciate that. But if you stay for even 3 months for under $250, you are going to get that whole intro month and two other webinars. Now, I do webinars. I've done webinars where I charge $299 for a whole board that are basically this material. So it's an extraordinary deal. I want everyone to be able to afford it. I want to build this. I want to make this into something because I've made it affordable. And because there's nothing like this out there, and every organization is frustrated. So I really hope you will think about it, because without training, it isn't going to work. And truly, you need just one board member to bring in a $500 gift to basically pay for this for a year. So I hope you'll try it out. And we have all sorts of things. We have a letter. We even created the letter for you to send to the board members to tell them how this is going. And we're going to send leads prompts so you know how to use the word. We're going to hold your hand in a good way and bring so much directly to them. So that is Board Fundraising Pro, of which I am, as you can tell, really excited. I've been waiting for this day to come for a while, because we've been working on developing it. Now, let me go back at least to Meredith's question. Can the staff lead see the stats on which trustees are accessing? Oh, that is such a good question. That is very hard to do, Meredith. We've looked at it, we've looked into how to do it in our system. We're going to talk about whether we can make something and have you generate a report for some small amount of money. We have not been able to automate that in our system to find out how people are using it. I must say, we need you to question them, or find out just from the discussions you're having whether you're getting that. And I wish we had that, Meredith, and we may one day. We may one day, but honestly, not at the moment, and not for trying. So let's see. What else? Was there another question? If not, I know we're past time. So I want to thank you again. Any questions? You can actually just email me at brian@askingmatters.com. We're also going to, I think next week we're going to have a little session where people can ask any questions they have about Board Fundraising Pro. So you can also bring your questions there, and maybe even bring a board member or two to that. It'll be just a half hour just on Board Fundraising Pro, and I'll be able to go into more detail on what we do. Thank you. These are really difficult times in the nonprofit world. So I wish you all the best. None of this is easy. And I hope to see you on Board Fundraising Pro. Have a great day, everyone.